Good morning, you're listening to KUNV 91.5, and this is Neon Eden. I'm your host, J. Patrick Cooligan. You can read my columns in the Las Vegas Sun and Las Vegas Weekly. My co-host, as always, Sun reporter Tovin LePan. Food is on everyone's minds these days as we enter a holiday season in which food and family and everything we hate about them is our focus. Here to discuss the latest of the Vegas food scene and also some other goings-on about town, Brock Radke, food editor of Las Vegas Weekly. Brock, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
You were at the UNLV-Oregon basketball game the other night.
I was.
What happened? What went wrong?
They lost, actually. They lost at home. I think Oregon's a good team. And actually, my mom went to the University of Oregon, and I was born in Eugene. So I decided not to wear my Adidas Oregon track jacket to that game.
Do you have one?
At the last second. Oh, yeah, yeah.
So but you're a UNR grad, though.
I am, yes.
So your heart, what just wasn't in it, is your fault, basically.
Well, you know, I grew up in Las Vegas. People ask me this all the time. I grew up in Las Vegas. I've been here for 25 years, and I was a kid when the Rebels won the national championship and when they were crazy awesome, and it was such a phenomenon, and it really took over the city. And if you weren't here then, it's kind of hard to understand how big of a deal it was, so... Even though I went to college in Reno, it's kind of hard to root for any other college basketball team.
Mm-hmm. Having grown up. So that was the team with Larry Johnson and...
Greg Anthony.
Right.
The 89-90, the two seasons where they were just dominant.
Right. And then the second year, they lost in the finals.
Right.
In a game that was pretty obviously fixed. No, I'm just kidding.
Of course.
Not really. Well, how's the food at Thomas & Mack? Did you get a chance to sample it?
I didn't get a chance. I had a whole lot of beer. I had a whole lot of delicious Bud Light, I think $6 a pop. But I did not try the food. That's the first Rebel game I've been to in probably at least a year or so.
Are you guys familiar with everywhere I've gone other than here, college sporting events, no alcohol? I was at USC over the weekend to watch my Irish continue their undefeated season. And no alcohol at the stadium, although some of us found a way. And certainly at Notre Dame games, no alcohol, and it's very strict.
I know in Michigan there was no alcohol at the stadium.
But at Sam Boyd, I've seen YouTube clips of fights in the stands with beer being thrown, and you're talking about Thomas & Mack. What is...
Well, if there's any stadium that you should have alcohol, it's probably Sam Boyd.
just to get through it.
Again, grew up in Las Vegas.
Yeah, so you don't know.
Always lived in Nevada and totally used to lots of beer at sporting events. So this is the first I've heard of this no beer thing.
A sporting event with beer?
Well, certainly Major League Baseball, football, basketball, but college sports, my experience is different. But I don't know, maybe I'm wrong and I've only been to a few places, but it's different here in Las Vegas, I think. All right, let's move on. Thanksgiving has just passed. Tell us, how was your Thanksgiving from a food perspective? What's the highlight?
Thanksgiving is the holiday of food, right? We're all obsessed with the meal that we're going to cook and hopefully not ruin. And mine was really good. I did not have a traditional turkey dinner this year. I actually went to my brother's house and had dessert first, which is something I would recommend. Had some pumpkin pie.
Because they had already eaten?
Correct. Okay. We skipped the family dinner and just went for dessert.
Okay. Wow.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, I don't know if that's okay to do or not. I tried it out this
year.
Why
did you do that?
I'm just kind of a jerk. I'm not really a good... I'm not
just bad
a
family.
Good brother. But yeah, had some pumpkin pie and some delicious cranberry almond tart that my wife made. Shout out to the wife. And then I went home and had filet mignon and asparagus and mashed potatoes. That was my Thanksgiving dinner.
Mm.
But in my family, we do have a turkey tradition that we do every year, and that is to take the leftover turkey on Friday or Saturday and roll it into tortillas and fry it and make taquitos, turquitos, I guess you could say, and make fresh salsa and guacamole and dispose of our leftovers with a little more... flair than
sandwich.
What we're used to, yeah.
That sounds good. Tovin, Thanksgiving?
Oh, yeah, we did a Friendsgiving, I guess you call it, you know, where everybody who wasn't going home to see family and stuff.
Orphans,
as there's probably a lot of them in Vegas, right? A lot of transplants. So we got together, and there's 10 of us, and we all pitched in different dishes, and my girlfriend and I did a sweet potato battle. She's a fan of the savory sweet potatoes, doesn't believe in marshmallows and sweet potatoes, would agree with Mark Bittman, that's abuse. I was just raised on sweet. My brother and I both have sweet tooth, and we insist on marshmallows. So actually, I tried to get fancy. I combined a few recipes, and I did Granny Smith apples, and then a layer of sweet potatoes and Granny Smith apples, layer of sweet potatoes, some walnuts, and then a sauce with brandy, butter, brown sugar, and some ginger, and then the marshmallows on top of that. And I think,
are the sweet potatoes mashed or
no? They were roasted and then sliced. So it was like slices of sweet potato and then slices of Granny Smith apples.
Is that a dessert?
It was. I would say it was more of a dessert. You know.
Yeah.
And then sounds
pretty fancy.
And then Sarah, she made it was more of the savory with cheese and onion and sweet potato. So they were totally divergent dishes. Yeah. But I would say at the end of the dinner, both had been equally eaten, you know, the similar pan size.
So you didn't take an official survey of the guests?
It was a tie. Well, then we served,
are you sure people weren't just being polite?
Maybe. I don't know. Before we served, we did take a survey of, like, in general, you know, before they had tried either of our dishes, if, in general, if people like marshmallows and sweet potatoes or if they're anti-marshmallows and sweet potatoes. And it was about 50-50.
I didn't know there was a big debate on that. I just generally am opposed to marshmallows.
Right, I can see that. Campfire. You're kind of a curmudgeon, so of course you hate marshmallows.
That's one of the criteria of a curmudgeon.
Yeah, to hate marshmallows.
Interesting. Okay. And sweet potatoes are kind of a thing now, aren't they, Brock?
Sweet potatoes are kind of a trendy ingredient.
I know they're supposed to be very healthy. I think it requires more energy to digest them, from what I understand, than a regular potato.
I think they have more vitamins than regular potatoes also.
Mm-hmm.
Usually anything.
And you can
that
eat them
more...
without, it seems to me, you can just bake, you know, you can just cook them.
Yeah.
It requires very little, you don't need butter really or anything. Because
Potato french fries are kind of a trend, right? Yeah. You see that a lot of places.
Right. I don't think those are good for you, but just regular. But if you just put some on a pan and put them in the oven, you can just eat that and they're pretty good. Right?
Sounds like a recipe.
All right.
I'll agree with that. I don't need marshmallows. I'll eat them.
Whereas, I'm just saying, you know, in contrast to a regular potato, you know, for me anyway, it requires quite a bit of, you know, butter or oil, salt.
Some people love potatoes.
I do, but I'm just, okay, let's move on. All right, you recently had a cover story in Las Vegas Weekly about the... top 10 steakhouses.
Yes.
This is a perennial debate, interesting topic here in Las Vegas. Tell us, first of all, I want to just make sure none of them are about to close, are they? I mean, a history of writing big feature stories about great restaurants that then close.
This is a pretty safe bet of places that are not going to close. Okay. It seems like...
is that something you added to your interview list?
The Strip can't really get enough steakhouses.
Yeah, that's true. Did you add that to your interview list? Did you say, last question, you're not about to close, are you?
Yeah, I ask that of everyone from now on.
It's the Brock Radke curse. Yeah. Kind of like the Sports Illustrated
curse. It's like the Madden curse.
Sports Illustrated or the Madden curse, right? Yeah.
All right, so take us through some of the highlights here.
So we did the...
Is this a ranking, literally 1 to 10, or how did it go?
You know what it is? We didn't publish the restaurants with like 1, 2, 3, 4, but it is the 10 best steakhouses in Las Vegas. And the reason that we didn't do the numbers is that when I came down to it and I had chosen really my favorite steakhouses, best steak experiences, it was so difficult to pick between what was number one and what was number two and what was... I guess the difference between like the best steakhouse and the 10th best steakhouse is almost nothing because they're so similar in the menus are so similar from steakhouse to steakhouse, especially on the Strip. Really the things that set them apart are like the atmosphere and the kind of different vibe that a restaurant might be going for. So you have your more kind of clubby steakhouse, which would be like STK at Cosmopolitan. And then you have...
What is there? There's a DJ there?
They do have DJs at night. I think think about 9 or 10, that place just kind of turns into an ultra lounge, basically, that just happens to serve food. But the food is really good. And that made our top 10. That was number 10, actually, just squeaking in. And then you have more kind of classic.
What do you like about it before we move on?
Well, for me, I'm not really a clubby person, but for me, I like that the food was that good. The first time that I went to SDK, I wasn't expecting the food to really balance out the equation with that kind of hipster restaurant vibe, right? But
the food was
good. Turns out it's really good.
I don't really see how it seems to me a steakhouse is the kind of place where after you're finished with the meal, you know, there's a kind of lean back in your chair and sort of exhale and, you know, maybe loosen your belt or something. Right. It doesn't seem to go with the
seems like a
lounge.
Night ender and not that you're going to want to get up and dance.
Hey,
after
let's
that.
Go down, you know, let's get going. Now.
STK counters that by having more petite cuts available. So they'll do a smaller filet, a smaller ribeye or whatever you might want. I don't know if people actually order smaller cuts.
That'd be interesting to find out.
I think maybe the female customer might prefer the smaller cut sometimes. But
right. Are you being sexist?
Yes.
all right. Honest. Let's. Okay. So STK Cosmopolitan.
And then there are some other. There's a lot of more traditional kind of steakhouse experiences. One of the newest ones on the strip is Old Homestead, which is at Caesar's Palace, and that's like a 100-year-old restaurant from New York that expanded almost a year ago to open in the space that used to be Nero's Steakhouse at Caesar's Palace. And that's just exactly what you expect from a steakhouse, you know, big pieces of beef, all the sides, the starches, all the stuff that you are going to expect, big bottles of red wine. Very straight ahead and really good. And I think that's kind of the traditional Vegas. That's what people come into town and are expecting to find.
And do you have a personal favorite? The one that, like, when your friends or family come to town and they say, I want the good steak, where are you taking them?
Yeah, my two favorites, and it was hard to choose between which one should be one and which one should be two. My favorites are Cut, which is Wolfgang Puck's Steakhouse at Palazzo, and Kraft Steak, which is by Tom Colicchio, well-known from Top Chef, and his steakhouse is at MGM Grand. Kraft Steak's a very, again, kind of traditional, kind of masculine space with a really nice bar and a simple approach to the menu, not doing a lot of different crazy sauces or anything, just kind of letting the great beef and vegetables stand on their own. And then Cut, Wolfgang Puck's restaurant, is more... It takes kind of a more creative approach, some kind of cutting-edge side dishes and appetizers that you don't find everywhere. Like they have a bone marrow flan, they have a Asian-spiced pork belly, and that's like the first thing you eat before you get to your giant steak. So those are my two.
More of a California
those are my two
experience,
favorites.
Maybe.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Now, when you're – tell us about your steakhouse experience. Like, what is – you know. What do you drink? What do you eat? Give us the whole rundown of your app. Obviously these places are different, but let's start with the Kraft Steak. If you're going to go there, you said a masculine space. Tell us what your experience is like there.
For me, the thing that, and in trying to gauge which of these steakhouses were the best, we, you know, consider not just the food and the atmosphere, but also the service, you know, more specific parts of the food, like do they have different stuff on the menu? Do they only have steak and potatoes? You know, creativity kind of goes a long way. At Kraft Steak, that's the best service that I've ever had in a steakhouse on the Strip, and I think that's what put it ahead in the end and made it my personal favorite pick.
What is it about the service?
It's you know, it's kind of a... I don't want to say it's a formal restaurant. It's an elegant place to eat, but it's somehow they kind of take the stuffiness out of it. It's definitely not a casual place to eat, but you feel like you're out and having a great experience without having that kind of stuffy approach. And I don't know. I've had probably three different servers there, and they've all been among the best that I've had in Vegas.
So you go there. Do you start with a Manhattan or...
I start with some whiskey, traditionally whiskey. A lot of people do martinis to start off, but Kraft Steak has a great bourbon and whiskey selection also at their bar. So you got to get a cocktail in you, to start, and then
rocks.
Sometimes. And then
what were the other or what?
Rocks or not?
Straight. Neat.
Yeah, sure. Okay. Why not? And then from there, I think it's best to kind of pick what you're going with meat wise. You know, choose your steak and order around that. If you're going to get a giant ribeye or a Chateaubriand or something that you would share, you know, you want to order around whatever the centerpiece of your meal is going to be. But a lot of these places have really great side dishes and really great appetizers. And the food is pretty stellar from start to finish. So you don't really want to just have a steak, you know. You don't want to fill up on one big piece of meat.
Mm-hmm. What are your go-to cuts when you're at a steakhouse? What do you lean towards?
I usually go for the ribeye just because I'm more, the ribeye is probably the most flavorful cut. But sometimes I'll go the filet. Texture, there's something to be said for texture. Now, a lot of these top 10 steakhouses are serving the Japanese beef, the Wagyu beef. And
what's that?
That's a pretty special experience. Wagyu is just a different breed of cow, and the Japanese beef is really just a luxury item. It's super expensive, and that's because the beef is actually marbled with fat to a much higher degree. So that's going to create not only a lot of kind of buttery flavor, but
their
also...
Their diet is different.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they're also bigger. They're bigger animals, so they can hold more weight, which also makes it so expensive. I actually learned a lot about that when I interviewed Tom Colicchio for this beef issue as well. So,
and he does. They have that there.
They do. They do. So that's kind of a unique experience. But
what does that run you? One of those?
It can be over $100 for one, 4 ounce piece of meat.
Wow.
Hmm.
Which is pretty crazy.
Yeah, that's $400 a pound.
Yeah. It's pretty nuts. But again, it's not for everybody. There's a lot of people that I think try it and
it's cheaper
pretend
than a
to
pound.
Like it.
All right, take us through the so these are your kind of top two. Take us through the others.
So the other craft steak was number one on my list. Cut was number two. After that was Prime at Bellagio, which is an older but still spectacular steakhouse. And then Carnivino was number four. That's also at Palazzo. That's Mario Batali's Italian steakhouse. And that's the place that's well known for having the longest aged, dry-aged beef in the country, pretty mm-hmm. much.
How long are we talking?
They have, a 240-day piece of meat. Which
Why is that important?
Well, the longer that you age it, the more it's going to get, the more things are going to soften up. So that steak in particular, it's not even like beef anymore. It's more, I would say that's closer to eating like a Iberico ham from Spain or something. It just has a real, real soft texture, and it has a kind of a funkiness to it. It's almost cheesy, actually. It almost tastes like blue cheese to me.
Mm-hmm. Well,
that's pretty crazy.
I mean, excuse my ignorance here, but why doesn't it spoil?
I can't answer that. I don't understand the.
Is it a salting process or?
I think that. What do you mean by spoil?
Well,
it's a good question.
I mean, in my college years, I think I tried to preserve some meat for 240 days, and I don't think it worked.
Accidentally? You
yes.
accidentally preserved some meat? I don't know. I don't know. I can't answer that.
It's a special...
they do have a special facility that they're aging things in, but
okay.
I think there's a certain amount of... I don't want to call it spoilage, but I don't have the best understanding of this, but, what is it that's making this... The chemistry of this the tissue is changing over uh-huh. the aging process. So does that scare you?
Well, no, it's just, it's interesting. Yes. Okay, move on. So
number five on the list was Gordon Ramsay steak, which is new at the Paris Las Vegas, After that was Old Homestead at Caesars that we mentioned, SW Steakhouse at Wynn, and Delmonico Steakhouse also at Venetian. And then
that's a New York restaurant, isn't it?
Yeah, that's Emeril Lagasse's Steakhouse, which has been here for a while. Kind of a forgotten restaurant, actually. It's down there in their convention area restaurant row, but a really good one. And then number nine was Strip Steak at MGM Grand, which is Michael Mina restaurant. And like we said, STK was number 10. And then we also listed 10 more, like the next best 10, because there's so many. There are so many really good steakhouses. Interestingly, I got a lot of emails and calls about this list, and there was a lot of comments on Facebook and on LasVegasWeekly.com. And, you know, people want to, anytime you do a top 10 list, people are going to argue and say what should have made the list. But I got quite a few calls from older people who were upset that some of the older kind of bygone era restaurants that are still around
didn't
make the list. Golden Steer.
Yeah.
And
which is a classic and great space, but seems to me has kind of gone downhill a little bit.
I don't know if it's gone downhill food-wise as much as it's just stayed the same. I mean, and they're not trying to compete beef-wise. They're not trying to buy this expensive stuff like these big, high-powered million-dollar steakhouses on the Strip are. So it's really a different experience, but
the problem
kind of hard to compete food-wise.
Yeah. I love Golden Steer, and certainly the idea of it being an older place where the Rat Pack hung out, but it's whenever I've been there a handful of times in the last few years, there's not many people there.
Yeah.
Which is kind of kills the buzz a little.
Yeah.
To be in an empty restaurant.
Yeah, I think it's struggled.
What other older places where people?
The steakhouse at Circus Circus is been popular with locals for a long time. And also, I had a really great voicemail message from a lady who was telling me about Hugo Cellar at the Four Queens downtown.
Yeah.
And she was like, shame on you for not including this place.
Some people swear by Hugo Cellar.
She said in my day, every woman wanted to go there because they give you a rose and it was the best steak in town. And she was very passionate about it. She didn't leave her number. I couldn't contact her.
That's too bad.
I wanted to write her top 10 steakhouse list.
Are there any of these, and then there's a certain sameness, I have to say, but are there any steakhouses on the Strip you think are kind of not up to snuff?
Yes. but again, I mean, this is just based on some of the places that I think are not up to snuff. I got phone calls and emails about saying, well, this place is the best place ever.
Like what?
Charlie Palmer Steak at Four Seasons. I haven't had the best experiences there. And that's another one that's kind of hidden and maybe not so well known despite the celebrity chef tag on there.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, that was the place that Anthony Bourdain and his wife kind of infamously ate at recently, and there was a little internet spat about that. Bourdain's wife had said that she got a really bad steak and she didn't name the restaurant, and it was a little bit of a hubbub, and then Bourdain came out and announced what restaurant it was, and Charlie Palmer had a statement about it. It's kind of a ridiculous little, you know, these internet brouhahas, how they go.
Yeah, but, I know.
But, yeah, I mean, there's a few steakhouses on the Strip. There's also a lot of... there's a lot that are just good, and you're going to get a great meal there, and you're going to spend maybe more money than you'd like to spend. Mm-hmm. And these places, the top 10, are all very expensive. But at least you know you're going to get...
You think it delivers on
the best possible meal you can get.
I'm a big fan of the Barrymore. You ever been there?
Yeah.
What are your thoughts? It's not really a traditional steakhouse, I guess.
No, it's not, but they do some steaks and some kind of steakhouse fare. Yeah, I love the Barrymore. It's kind of a new take on the old Vegas style restaurant.
Right.
The decor is really kind of throwback, and the company behind that restaurant is very ambitious and has a lot of a lot of stuff in the works and a lot of other stuff on the Strip. That's Block 16 Hospitality Group. Mm-hmm. They also do Holsteins at the Cosmopolitan. That's kind of their big dog. So, but yeah, that's a really fun place and a unique place.
Yeah. All right. Are you done with steaks?
Yeah, I think we're done with steaks. You know, we don't have that much time left. Why don't you talk about openings? Or what are the restaurants that are new that you've tried or are excited to try and people should be looking out for?
Sure. We're kind of late in the year, a bunch of new significant new neighborhood restaurants have popped up in the last month or so. Probably most high profile is Honey Salt, which is located in the near Summerlin at Charleston and Rampart. And that is a restaurant opened by the husband and wife team of Kim Cantonwalla, who just left Wynn, and his wife Elizabeth Blau, who is like awesome. She's like the architect of all things great in Vegas restaurants. She helped build the food and beverage programs at Bellagio and Wynn Resorts. And they're married, and they opened this restaurant, and this is their kind of personal space. They wanted to kind of create their own, like how they entertain when they have guests over to their house. They wanted to make the restaurant version of that. So it's kind of comfortable American food. It's really good, and they've redone the space that used to be Nora's Wine Bar in Summerlin, and opened it up a little bit and brightened it up a little bit. And it's kind of a family-friendly neighborhood restaurant like you would hope to have in your neighborhood, and the food's really good.
Yeah, I actually went there, had a chance to check it out, and it is a lot brighter than it used to be, and I thought it was really good. I actually got a steak. We were speaking so much about steaks, but I got a steak. It was really good, and I would say that's definitely a place to check. People should check out.
And then on the other side of town, kind of similar food done in an even more casual fashion is at Meat and Three. It's on Eastern, almost into Anthem, way out there. And it's in the same little shopping center as a breakfast and lunch place called Bread and Butter, and it's the same owner and chef. His name is Chris Herron, and he recruited one of his friends from Bouchon on the Strip, where he used to run the bakery, to cook this food. It's kind of a Southern cafeteria style, so it really is Meat and Three. You choose what meat you want, maybe mm-hmm. fried chicken or brisket or something like that, and then you pick from a wide selection of hot and cold side dishes. It's the perfect place to like grab dinner on the way home for the family.
Yeah, I went there, and it was really a great addition to the southeast part of the valley. And who knew that Brussels sprouts could be fried like that? And I don't know that there's much nutritional value left once you do that, but it makes them edible.
I think it makes them better in every way.
Yeah.
Yeah, and really inexpensive also. I think it's like $15.
Yeah, it's like it's great meal, and really more than you can eat. Yeah. I mean, depending on who you are, but
easily $15 feeds two people there, I would say.
Yeah, right. So worth checking out. And at Town Square, there's a meatball place is open.
Yeah, at Town Square near the Rave movie theater on the ground level. There is Meatball Spot, which is the new restaurant that is helmed by Chef Carla Pellegrino, who you can watch on Top Chef right now. She has another restaurant in Henderson, and she was also working at a restaurant at Tropicana, but she left there, and now she's focused. I don't know how she focuses on all these different things, but she's at Meatball Spot, and seems like a pretty fun, casual Italian menu there. Pizza, pasta.
It's basically a pasta place.
Meatballs, yeah.
Okay.
I think you can order different kinds of meatballs, different kinds of sauces, mix and match.
And different kinds of pasta.
Yes.
All right, we want to thank Brock Radke, food editor, Las Vegas Weekly, for joining us. My co-host is Tovin LePan. Our producer is Steven Zeller. You've been listening to KUNV 91.5. And this is Neon Eden. We'll catch you next week.